I'm Tamara Steele. In this week's show, New Brunswickers may be facing two elections soon, and we'll get some information on how that might work. A longtime mayor is not reoffering, and third time lucky in a very specific pitch for funding. Elections New Brunswick is preparing for two possible elections around the same time. Municipal elections are on May 11th, and there's growing speculation the provincial government could soon fall. But the province's chief electoral officer says they'll be ready for the next provincial election, no matter when it happens. Paul Zimby's Brad Perry spoke with Kim Poffenroth about what they're doing to prepare.
What has Elections NB kind of been doing to prepare for the next election, especially given the fact that we are in kind of a tumultuous situation where we have a minority government?
Well, immediately after the provincial election in September of 2018, given the minority government situation, Elections New Brunswick took some immediate actions to begin preparations in the event of an election being called at any time. So we ordered ballot paper, we repacked things as much as was available and then started ordering materials. We also encouraged government to have the provincial returning officers appointed as soon as possible. So we actually did some training with them, some initial training in November of 2019. And we actually have some more training going on with returning office staff during this last month, while we've also been training our municipal returning office staff for the upcoming local elections. So that's some of the things we did in advance. Ordered extra computers in case the two events happen at the same time.
So it's all about, I guess, trying to do as much as you can ahead of time before, you know, the actual election happens. Because, of course, there's probably some things you can't do. Of course, you can't print the names on the ballots because we don't know who's running yet and those sorts of things.
Exactly. Ballot printing is a good example. Also, even renting returning offices. We've instructed the returning officers to locate possible locations for their returning offices, but with no date, it's impossible to, you know, sign leases or even ship out the materials. When you're working with a fixed election date, you can actually sign those leases ahead of time, make sure material is shipped to the offices so that as soon as the writ is issued, they can open their offices. But in the case of what we like to call a snap election, even that won't be possible.
So, of course, we do have fixed election dates here in New Brunswick for both provincial and municipal elections, which, you know, typically gives you plenty of time to prepare. You kind of know when that date is coming. So what sort of challenges, I guess, beyond, you know, having to kind of rush things along, can the snap election create for you and your team?
Well, certainly not being able to have offices opened as soon as the writ is issued is a bit of an issue. We've had to redirect, especially with recent events in provincial politics, we've had to redirect some of our human resources and bring on extra casuals to make sure everything is packed for the provincial election. So we've sort of directed resources away from preparation for the municipal election to the provincial temporarily, and now they're back on making sure the last-minute preparations are there. And there is the possibility of some challenges around staffing for polling locations, for example, or we have a lot of returning office staff that have been appointed to work both for the municipal and the provincial elections. So those folks may find it very challenging if those two elections occur very close proximity in time.
And I would imagine, you know, the election deadlines, such as, you know, when candidates have to be submit their nomination papers, those sorts of things, would also be a lot tighter in the case of a snap election than, of course, when you'd be dealing with an election on a fixed date. Is that right?
It would be tighter for the parties because they may not know ahead of time whether or not they have a candidates nominated already. With regard to the nomination of candidates for a fixed date election, it's the 20th day before ordinary polling day. In the case of whether it's a by-election or an election that's not held on the fixed date, so if we do have a provincial election, let's say sometime in the next 6 months, the close of nominations is only 17 days before ordinary polling day, which gives us less time to print ballots and get those delivered. But there can also be a longer election period in the case of a snap election, because those election periods can be anywhere from 28 to 38 days. So we don't even know the length of the election period, whereas when you're talking about a fixed date election, it's a fixed 32-day RIC period.
Okay, so I guess there's not a huge difference then between the SNAP and the regular fixed one in terms of those deadlines then.
No, it's the only date that changes is the close of nominations, and it is 3 days shorter,
okay.
3 days closer to the election day. So it does give a much shorter turnaround time for getting those ballots printed.
Now, of course, New Brunswickers will be heading to the polls in May for municipal elections. That is the fixed date that's coming up for that. Realistically, would Elections New Brunswick have the resources to potentially be, you know, operating or running two elections at the same time or, you know, almost at the same time?
If that happens, we will find the resources to make it happen. The returning office staff have been appointed for the most part. In terms of financial resources, luckily with Elections New Brunswick runs the election, and the way the legislation is set out, government has to pay the tab. So we will find the resources. I do suspect that one of the larger challenges will be with poll workers, and whether it's a matter of poll worker, you know, fatigue, if they work two elections close together, they may not be interested. So I do anticipate that we may have some challenges there. And another challenge for Elections New Brunswick, I expect, will be making sure electors are clear on which event they're voting at and that the electors themselves don't suffer from election fatigue.
Obviously, municipal elections are among the three elections, municipal, provincial, and federal, are the ones that typically tend to have the lower voter turnout. Is there ever concern that, you know, if you were having two elections pretty close to one another, that would potentially lower that voter turnout, especially where we just had a federal election here just a few months ago as well?
I mean, it would be pure speculation what the impact would be, simply because it hasn't happened in anyone's recent memory at all. It could have an impact, but it's really hard to say, and it may depend on which election comes first.
Lastly, you know, with the municipal election being set on a certain day, does Elections New Brunswick and the province have the option to kind of move that date if need be, to try to give a little more space if there were to be a provincial election?
Yeah, no, the municipal and other local elections are fixed for May 11th, and there's no authority in the legislation for that date to be moved by anyone, be it government or Elections New Brunswick. If the event occurs that the two events happen either overlapping or very closely in proximity in time, that hopefully the electors and all the candidates involved will be patient with Elections New Brunswick and all our staff out in the field, because there will be challenges. We're doing everything we can to be prepared, to make sure training is up to date and the materials are ready, but it will happen a little bit differently than it would on a fixed date.
I'm Brad Perry.
You might say Bobby's Hospice was lucky the third time around when it comes to receiving money from the 100 Women Who Care of Greater St. John. After presenting for a third time on Tuesday night, the women voted for the Westside Hospice in St. John to get a check for nearly $25,000. I spoke with CEO Sandy Maxwell about their plans for the money and the service that Bobby's Hospice provides.
Tell me about your history with this event. You have tried before. You've made this pitch before. Tell me about that.
This is our fifth time, I think, between either 100 Women Who Care, and there was a Men That Care, and 50 Women That Care in Rossay. So this is our fifth presentation. So when we got the call again, we said, well, let's try again. And this time I thought, well, you know, rather than talk about statistics, and I'm going to tell some stories of real people and what they really go through, and maybe that'll be something people can relate to.
And so you have never won money here before?
Never.
Okay.
At any of them.
Wow. And so what do you think you'll do with it specifically?
Well, we have to raise $1.5 million every year to pay the bills, and that includes everything. It costs about $25,000 a year for the food to feed our patients, so this would be a wonderful, perfect fit with that. It costs about $25,000 a year for our medications that we give our patients. Obviously, we have heat and light and all that, but we'll probably look at our food services program and direct this to that, because that's a wonderful fit.
Okay. Could you just maybe tell me a couple of stories? I really enjoyed Karen's story.
Karen, 54-year-old woman who was diagnosed with a terminal illness, and she landed in hospital and then eventually came to Bobby's Hospice. And she was a wonderful person. Everybody in the house got to know her. She was with us a fairly long time, and she wanted to help me with fundraising. So I interviewed her, and she told me her story, and she told me what it was like feeling like your life is stolen from you, and suddenly going from being strong and independent to being 100% dependent on other people and feeling so vulnerable. And she said, nobody has any idea. When you come to hospice, you feel so safe. You're with family, with people who really care. And I told the story tonight, and it's a true story. She fell, and she was in the bathroom. And that's often what happens. You go from being very independent. You don't realize you're getting weaker. And you get up, and you think you're okay, and then you'll slip to the floor. And she sat there crying, and the nurses got right on the floor with her and cried with her and hugged her and then helped her get back to bed. And as I said, she went on the journey of ups and downs. There was times it seemed like she was close to death. She'd have great pain and symptom management, and we'd get her back for a while, and she wanted to live as long as she could. She and her wife was pregnant, and then she wanted to live to see that baby born, and that baby was born just a couple weeks ago, just a few weeks before she died. She just died last week, and her funeral was on Saturday. I know she would be so happy. I know she's up there right now, smiling and happy that, you know, we were able to win for Bobby's Hospice and that her legacy and her can live on. And she's a wonderful person. We'll never forget her.
What do you want people to know about hospice that maybe they don't know?
A lot of people think it's sad and it's dreary and it's a place of death. And it's anything but. There, of course, is sadness. People are losing their lives. But it is a place of living. And it's amazing to watch people who have been at home or maybe in hospital, maybe haven't had the right pain and symptom management, haven't been able to get out of bed, and they come there. And with our expert team of doctors and nurses who really work their magic, you'll watch these people almost come back to life. And they get out of bed, and they can spend quality time with loved ones. We can't change the outcome. We can't stop the disease process and what will eventually end in death. But we absolutely change the journey. It doesn't have to be a journey of pain and suffering and, you know, incredible difficulty. It can be a journey of happiness. And that's what we try to do every day, is give everybody, you know, make their life as meaningful as possible, as comfortable as possible, that quality time with loved ones, and hope for some people are hoping to live long enough to see someone special come home from away, or as Karen wanted to live long enough to see her baby born. So it's incredible to watch that happen.
So where does your funding come from? And do you think there should be more assistance in that area?
Well, when we started 10 years ago, Bobby's Hospice now is 10 years old this year, we're about 50-50, and that's the way it is in Canada usually, and the rest of Canada, 50% funded by the government, 50% community funded through the charity. That we're now down to 32% funded by government, with the rest of it coming from the community. So we're raising, government provides us $766,500 a year, we're raising $1.5 million, because we've only had one increase in 10 years, a small increase. We should really be at that 50-50 level as equal partners in this, but so far we're continuing to raise more of the money than government's providing.
Is it because not everybody has a hospice, or what? Any reasons, any theories as to why?
Well, for government, I mean, we're keeping people out of hospital, but government's not saving money because they're not closing hospital beds. Certainly all the people that we've cared for, and I think there's about 1,040 at this point now in 10 years, patients would have been in hospital. They couldn't be at home. They would have been stuck in hospital. But government's not saving money, so it's just a transfer of some money to the hospice to help us care for them.
And your medical professionals, do you have nurses, do you have doctors as well?
Yeah.
And are they all Horizon staff, or how does that work?
Our medical director is Dr. Chris O'Brien. He is paid for by hospice. He's on a 0.2 full-time equivalent position, so he's with us one day a week. The other physicians are paid by Horizon Health. But all of our nursing staff, our RNs, LPNs, PSWs, we have housekeeping, we have food services, we have, maintenance staff. It's a big facility. It's 22,000 square feet. And there's a whole full team of people that are in place to not only care for patients, care for the facility, but also to run all the administration stuff that goes, you know, with running it's a small community hospital is what it is. So all the staff that are required to run that
How many beds do you have?
We have 10. Average length of stay is about 3 weeks at the present, with most people staying 2 weeks. We have had some long stays. People who've been, 6 months or more. Our criteria for admission is a life expectancy of 6 months or less. But we don't kick you out if you live past 6 months. We have sent a few patients who stayed with us for a year and their disease has not progressed. We've sent them to nursing home because they really aren't appropriate for hospice care. And the other thing is we want them to experience, maybe some more social activities that we don't provide in a hospice. Most of our patients are quite ill, so they're not. We don't have a lot of social activities because they're just too ill to participate in that. So,
is it mainly seniors?
No, 20% are people under the age of 65. And it's amazing. I think just recently we had half of our patients under the age of 65, people in their 40s and 50s.
The other two charities who made a pitch at the latest meeting of the 100 Women Who Care of Greater St. John were First Steps Housing and the St. John SPCA. The next meeting will be held in June. Grace Lozier is not reoffering to be mayor of Grand Bay Westfield. I spoke with her about her long career and began by asking her how many years she'd spent in municipal politics.
28 years.
And how many as
May mayor? Of 1992.
Wow. How many as mayor?
The last six terms. So I was elected actually on June the 26th, 1997, for mayor to a community that didn't exist until January the 1st, 1998.
Oh, wow. That's actually something probably for the history book.
Well, I think it probably is because I was deputy mayor of one town until the end of 97, while I was mayor-elect of a new town that didn't exist from June that same year until January 1st of 1998.
And was the old town just Grand Bay?
Yes.
Right.
It was the village of Westfield and the town of Grand Bay.
Yes, I remember it because I remember everybody talking about them separately.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So that's a pretty big transition to have observed.
It was a big transition, I'll tell you.
Would you say that's the biggest thing that you've watched happen since you've been in municipal politics?
Well, look, I would like to think the biggest thing that happened are the all of the investments and things we've been able to make in this community since we've become one.
And what's a few examples?
Oh, Brundage Point, clearly. Our waterside gathering place. We have Grand Bay Westfield still has 7 public accesses to the river. It was important to maintain access to the river for this waterside community.
What about in terms of growth? What have you seen happen over that time?
Growth has been measured in Grand Bay Westfield. It's how the people in this community have clearly told us they wanted it. They didn't want to lose the identity, their small town charm, they would refer to it as, and I think we've been able to manage that while being fiscally responsible and putting investments where they matter to our community.
And you've held the tax rate for a long time.
Oh, yeah. I think we must be 15 years now. But more importantly, when I first came here, I think the capital budget, I think we had $30,000 to spend. Can you imagine? In a town. While we now have up over $1 million a year, and that's without borrowing any. So we're able to turn that into reinvestment into our streets and roads and maintaining the value of what is generally people's largest investment, their home.
So what do you think the challenges are for Grand Bay Westfield?
Well, look, I think the whole province of New Brunswick has a challenge with population growth. I think that we all need to grow somewhat. I mean, the price of anything isn't going down. So as they continue to grow, you need to grow sufficiently to meet those challenges. And so that should really be coming from growth in your community.
Do you see any opportunities for regionalization? I know that's a dirty word.
No, well, it's not a dirty word to me. It's not a dirty word to me. It makes, look, regional facilities, for example. We agreed to that back when we were studying restructuring under Skip Cormier. I mean, that wasn't very long for us to understand why that was necessary. And it's those kind of discussions where they make sense work. But honestly, this is a huge region, and people underestimate the, I won't call it a burden, the responsibility to service a large region like this takes. I mean, Grand Bay, Westfield, frankly, is the next largest community next to St. John. Just sheer size brings you challenges that need to be acknowledged and met. So when you talk to me about regionalization to expand services that are sometimes already the most expensive in the province over what is the next largest geographic area doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm not sure of anybody who could show me where that would make some monetary sense.
So why the decision to not reoffer now?
Well, I just think that, look, it's 28 years. I want someone to come in who has the same level of enthusiasm and energy as I did when I first began at 36. And it's time for me to step aside, and I've got things I'd like to do with my husband and my family and my friends and whatever else change brings me in my life.
Right. So what are your ultimate hopes and dreams for the future of your community?
That it doesn't lose its small-town charm, that it does continue to grow, however, because growth, you need to grow to exist. And so, I want it to grow. I want them to continue to consult with the community so that they understand what a community wants, because honestly, that's the main thing I always told myself when I got elected, community first. Community first. This isn't about Grace Lozier, and it's not about anybody else individually. It's about community and being able to deliver to a community those things that you can't, while understanding that there are, you have to say no sometimes.
New Brunswickers go to the polls to elect mayors and councillors on May 11th. That's it for this week's show. I'm Tamara Steele.